Ladies and gentlemen, the following is a talk by the late commander of the American Nazi Party, Mr. George Lincoln Rockwell. The occasion was in Dallas, Texas, in 1965, where approximately 75 prominent Dallas citizens accepted a personal invitation to gather at a private home to see and hear Mr. Rockwell.
Not be the best thing to say to my president, but I have been accepted in most cases, usually by people who have very little to lose, by young people who are working people and are, I would say, at the upper social level, and don't stand to lose too much. I have never been so encouraged as I have here in Dallas to see so many people who have so much to lose, who are laying so much on the line, who are willing even to come here and see me. I realize that it takes a lot of courage on the part of a lot of people. You've heard that I'm a Jewish agent working for Harry Golden and Bernard Baruch and the ADL and about just about everything else, and I realize just how much courage it takes, and I'm very grateful to all of you. About the only thing that I think I can do in a talk to a group like this is to try to give you some down-to-earth picture of what I see around the country and what I think we can do. I think that there's nobody that would be in this room if he weren't deeply concerned about what is happening to our race, to our Christian Republic, to our Constitution, and as far as I'm concerned, the major thing is our race. That's my basic concern. I believe, along with Senator Bilbo and John Rankin and some of the other great men that I think are in the tradition which we are following, that if the race is preserved, we can produce everything else. If our race is destroyed, it matters not what kind of government we preserve. If we don't keep our white race, we're going to lose everything else. And I think they're after our white race more than anything else. I think they're using the Negroes, the Communist Party, and the Jews are using the Negroes as a battering ram to smash down the white race, because they recognize as long as the white race exists, they cannot get away with it. They can't put communism over on this country. Now, what I have to offer here, if anything, and I believe I do, is an analysis of why we sit here in this room, and some of you must be horrified that it will get out that you have spoken to me. Why should one American be afraid to be known that you've spoken to another American who is a veteran, spent 19 and a half years in the Navy, and loves his country just as much as any American alive? Why should you be afraid? Why should we be beaten down? Why should we be failures after 50 years of putting out work for years and years and years? Many of you have worked literally for years to save this country, and what do you see? I'm sure there's nobody in this room that won't agree with me that we have had at least 50 years of failure since 1913, when the Jews got the income tax amendment, since they set up the big foundation. They got the election of senators directly instead of by the state legislatures. They set up the Anti-Defamation League, and they set up the Federal Reserve. In 1913, they did all those things. That was at Woodrow Wilson's time, the first, I believe, either communist or pro-communist president we ever had. And ever since then, ladies and gentlemen, let's face it, we have been losing. That is my theme. That we have been losing steadily. And when people say to me, yes, but how do you think you can win with a swastika and a name like Nazi? My answer is, who else is winning? Do you know of anybody else who has won or is winning? We just went through the horrible scene of seeing the whole country go crazy over a Jewish leader. The whole enemy is led by Jews, and suddenly here comes a Jew over to our side, and thousands of people, many of you here, would have said it was impossible 5 years ago that you would be for a Jew for president of the United States. And isn't this true? Isn't this what's happened? And yet, what has this man done? He has got us to the point where millions of dollars have been expended. Millions of people are discouraged. All over the country, they have been going since the elections. People are disgusted, discouraged. They just don't know what to do anymore. We have seen Henry Ford rise up to fight them and be beaten down. We've seen Lindbergh rise up to fight them and be beaten down. We've seen Father Coughlin rise up to fight them and be beaten down. We've seen Joe McCarthy, perhaps the greatest of all of them, give it a try, and they beat him down. And I might mention, for those of you who have not read my book, let me tell you very briefly the story of Joe McCarthy, or review it for you. so that those of you who still have soft feelings for Goldwater will understand how they do this to us. Joe McCarthy was set up by Bernard Baruch. For those of you who don't know, I remember, I believe in Joe McCarthy. I love the man. I think he was one of the greatest Americans who's ever lived. He really tried. But as long as you do not understand the Jewish problem and face up to it and deal realistically with it, you might just as well not fight. Bernard Baruch called Joe McCarthy up to his New York apartment. And this at the time, if you remember, was at the time of the Rosenbergs. Remember, they were bringing out one Jewish spy after another. Greenglass, Weinbaum, Brothman, Moskowitz, all these Jewish spies were being dragged out. And the Jews were horrified. And instead of deploring it, like the Italians, good Italians deplore the mafia, the Jews have another answer. They asked Joe McCarthy, Bernard Baruch said, if you will go out, Joe, and bring up some Gentile communists, we'll back you. And Joe McCarthy, like many going before him, thinking, I'll outsmart these people, I'll take their support and get going, and I'll fight them, and when the time comes, I'll get all the communists, not just the Gentiles, went along with Jewish Mr. Baruch. And do you remember the first thing he did? Owen Lattimore. Remember how he said he was the biggest spy in the United States? Owen Lattimore. This was at a time when all the spies were Jews. And all of a sudden he brought out Owen Lattimore, and he made a lot of silly charges that didn't fit as to numbers. I'm not saying that his charges about communism weren't correct. I'm simply saying that his number, he got all mixed up on his numbers, and they began to poke fun at him. He was advised by George Sikorsky, a supposedly right-wing Jewish columnist. Remember that? He installed as his chief of staff Roy Cohn, a Jew from New York. And Roy Cohn told him that we need another fine Jew here to help us, David Chaim. Now here he was, set up by Baruch, advised by Sikorsky, staffed by Cohn and Chaim, and who got him? Do you remember who got Joe McCarthy? It was Roy Cohn calling from his office in the name of Joe McCarthy to get favors from the Army for David Chaim. It wasn't Joe McCarthy that did a single, they couldn't get Joe McCarthy. He never did a wrong thing. But these two Jews are the guys that got Joe McCarthy. Now, I'm here tonight to tell you that there is no compromise whatsoever with the truth. We are the only weapon that we have in the right wing, in pro-American, pro-white, Christian-American, Republicanism, whatever you want to call it. There is no compromise with the truth. That's the only weapon we have. And when we compromise the truth and try to sneak, we are competing with the biggest sneaks in the world. And if there's anybody in this room that thinks for 1 minute that we can out-sneak the Jews, he's got another thing coming. They are the master sneaks of all times. We are not sneaks. Our kind of people are direct. Our Anglo-Saxon and Germanic and Nordic forefathers stand up with mighty club if they had to, and they stand up to their enemies and they beat them over the head until they win or they get beaten. They don't go sneaking and skulking around like a bunch of Jews. They don't use lies. The only way we can win is to stand up like men and fight. Now, I believe that we have lost for all these years, not only in America, but all over the world, because we have continually been sucked into this business of believing there's some easy way to win. Everybody has tried to do it by telling a little bit of the truth. And folks, this is like being a little bit pregnant. It just isn't possible. You either tell the truth or you are a liar. You've got to stand up for the whole truth. And believe me, I thought for a long time perhaps I was wrong to tell what I now know to be the whole truth, that Adolf Hitler fought our fight. But I now begin to find out it works. How many of you people would have said just 2 or 3 years ago that you would ever be sitting in a room listening to the head Nazi of the world discuss on Nazism? You would have thought it was impossible. And yet you're here. Some of you may be under protest and some of you quaking with horror. But you're here. And you will listen. And some of you will realize that some of the things I'm saying make some sense. I hope that a lot of the things you will think make sense. We are making progress. People are beginning to realize that what happened in Germany was a forerunner of what's happening here. Have you noticed, by the way, how the women's fashions even are precisely going along the pattern of 1920? They've got the same crazy dance music, the same immorality, the same filth in our national life. Everybody's crazy over money and there's a big boom. They're getting ready to do the same thing to us here that they did to the Germans in 1920. And in the face of this, here is what I think we must understand. We are presently a tiny little group. Not because we don't have a lot of people, we don't have a lot of force, and we don't have a lot of backing. Our problem is that our people will not stay together. You know, you've heard this in the right wing a million times. If we could only all get together. I gave that up. I was a conservative for 8 years. And I worked with all leading conservatives. I helped set up Buckley and National Review. I did everything I could. I put every penny I saved and made in business. I put it all into a conservative effort. And I saw it go down the drain. Because the conservatives will not stick together. You all know that. I'm not telling you something you don't know. The Jews stick right together in a solid block. They all vote the same way. The Negroes all stick together in a solid block. They all vote the same way. The white man is, some are Yankees, some are rebels. Some are rich, some are poor. Some are labor, some are management. The Catholics and Protestants were divided into a million little competing groups, and we, to the pleasure of the Jews, divide and cancel each other out. So I have given up the idea that we're going to all get together. This leaves only one possibility. Some of us have got to find some way to organize and be able to fight this filthy thing that is taking over our country, destroying our race, destroying our morals, and destroying every fabric of our national being. And in analyzing how are we going to do this, here is what I would like to present for your consideration. Why have we failed, all of these other groups? Why did McCarthy fail? Father Coughlin failed, Lindbergh failed, and every group, Goldwater, I hate to even mention him in the same breath with those great men, why have we continually failed? And I will ask you to be as ruthless with yourselves as you've ever been in your life. Do not be subjective. This is what I finally had to do. When I kept losing as a conservative, I got fed up with it. I got fed up with being blacked out. Nobody would ever give us any publicity. You never heard of anything of a right-wing meeting. All I ever saw us was doing was failing. And I began to try to analyze, why have we been losing? Have you ever thought seriously with this? Why are we still here? We've got more money than the Jews. That's the truth. Very few people realize that. We have insurance. We have banking. We have railroads. There's a lot of huge industries which are entirely Gentile. The Jews don't have all the money. We've got a lot of money. We've got intelligent, brilliant, wonderful people. We've got dedicated people. We have everything we need to win, and we keep losing. Has it ever sunk into you, have you ever laid awake at night, as I have many and many a night, wondering, why, how can we keep losing? We have the truth, we have the force, we have the people, we have the money, and we keep losing and losing and losing. And we just did it again. We just lost to the biggest liar and crook perhaps it has ever been in the White House. A man who was openly known probably to kill to get in that White House. A man who was perhaps the biggest fake, the most obvious fake we've ever had. And we still couldn't beat him. Now, I think that if we're going to survive, folks, each one of you individually must search your heart and ask, why did that happen? And you must see that it never happens again. We can't afford to lose anymore. Surely there's nobody in this room that can imagine that we can survive for another 10 or 15 years. I think we can make it 6 or 7 more. I think we'll make it through hell for 4 years of Lyndon Johnson. But we cannot make it another 4. We have got to find a way to win. And here is what I will submit to you is the only way that we're going to be able to win. We have got to ruthlessly analyze our failure and realize that the reason for it is because we have been aiming at the wrong part of political power. I will ask you to think how many of you have had the experience of taking a book or a pamphlet of facts, absolutely incontrovertible facts about the Jews or about communism or what have you, or patriotism, and taking it to our compatriots and say, look at this. About Lyndon Johnson, for instance, The Texan Looks at Lyndon, a great book. How many of you have the experience of taking this sort of thing to our fellow citizens and saying, read this? And they say, I'm not interested, but they won't read it. Haven't you had that experience? Haven't you seen people just won't read? They won't study. They don't care. And we just don't know what to do about it. And instead of analyzing and realizing perhaps that something wrong with that approach, we continue to do it. I keep hearing people preach and preach and preach, the truth will make you free. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the truth by itself has never made anybody free in the world. It didn't give us the United States of America. You know what got us the United States of America? The men who had the courage to stand up there at Concord and Lexington with guns to defend it. The truth didn't do it alone. You need the truth, but you also need the men to stand up and fight for it, and they've got to do it intelligently, folks. They cannot keep stumbling like a farmer that keeps going out in the past and stumbling over the same rock. There's something wrong with that man. Anybody with any intelligence says, I've got to go a different path, and I'm going to keep falling over that rock. And that's what we've been doing for 50 years. We keep falling on our face. And the reason for it, ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you is this. The people in this room will read facts, or you wouldn't be here. Now, I'm not flattering you. You are superior. You are an elite. There's one lady here in the room that is, I've discovered 7 months ago knew nothing. And now she's a dedicated Nazi because she reads and reads and reads and studies and studies and studies, and I've never seen that before. That's the world championship. Now, this, ladies and gentlemen, this is what you must understand. The masses of people that we must win around this country will not study. They read comic books. They like to go and see the TV and sit with their beer and their feet up and looking at the TV. They like to read dime novels or whatever you want to call them, cheap pulp stuff. They will not study like you people will do. Now, I used to be on Madison Avenue in advertising, and I know the biggest sin, the stupidest thing any of you that are businessmen know that the worst mistake you can make when you're running a business is to run an ad that you like. You have, in order to succeed, you must run an ad which will sell. Is this not correct? Any man that's a businessman knows that's the truth. I used to be in advertising, and I know a lot of advertisers would insist on making me run ads that they liked and they wouldn't sell. You must run an ad that reaches the people that you want to reach, not the one that you might particularly like. My point is this. The masses of people will not study facts and think about them rationally. The masses of people must be entertained, and everything you give them must be sugar-coated and made easy. Now, if you say that's evil and wicked, I will say, well, perhaps so. But Lyndon Johnson is giving them that sugar-coated stuff. The Jews are giving them the sugar-coated. Lyndon Johnson and the Jews and all the enemy people that keep winning, they hand the people all the soft soap and the garbage that wins them. Is this not true? Didn't Roosevelt do it? Goldwater just proved that to you. Lyndon Johnson is a lout, a plain, unadulterated lout, and an evil, wicked man. And he won. And the reason he won is because Goldwater and our kind of people aimed up here. And Lyndon Johnson aimed here. For the benefit of the tape, I'm pointing at my head and my heart. Do you want? I hope that you can follow what I'm saying to you. In order to win political power, we must win people. Political power is based on having millions of people with you, not conservatives, not a few people in the upper social level, not intelligent people. You have got to have masses and masses of people. And the masses of people never in the history of the world have been intellectual. They are not book readers. They are not deep thinkers. They are not the kind of people to be deeply concerned, as every person in this room is, about ideas. What moves the average man is something that he feels in his stomach and his heart. So what does Lyndon Johnson do? He promised he's going to have a war on poverty. And he's going to see that everybody is going to have plenty of money. Now, you and I all know, we all think about this, know that this is plain lying garbage. They can't give them money without taking it away from them. Nobody gets something for nothing. But Mr. Lyndon Johnson says this, and he reaches their heart. Let me give you a specific example of what I'm talking about. Barry Goldwater, malice aforethought, went up to Appalachia, which is right near where I'm operating, out of Virginia. Goes over to West Virginia where people are hungry. Fathers see their little kids hungry. And they see their wives in having a terrible time trying to keep the house going. And Barry Goldwater goes up there and he preaches against welfare and against the poverty bill. That's what he specifically did when he went up there. And I'll leave it to you to think why he did it at that particular place. Lyndon Johnson goes up there, and he goes into these little shacks, and it's just phony as a $3 bill. But he goes in there, and his heart just bleeds for that poor lady and the little ones, and he pats them on their head, and he is going to take care of them, and the hearts of the masses just pour out for Lyndon Johnson. They don't care what you tell them about him. They don't care about any facts. Lyndon Johnson is their savior. He's going to help them, and they love him. It has nothing to do with reason. It has to do with winning the hearts of simple people. And my whole pitch here, the thing that I pray that I can make our people understand, is we have got to quit trying to drive facts into the masses of people and start using the techniques of emotional engineering that I learned on Madison Avenue to win our people back. Now, don't say to me that that's evil and wicked to use plotting, scheming, emotional engineering on our people, because if you don't do it, the Jews will, and they do. And I'm here to tell you tonight, I am sick and tired of losing. I have lost all I'm going to lose. If I'm going to lose, I'm going to lose in a blaze of glory. I'm going to fight. I am not going to keep losing and losing and losing. I have never been, as I said to some of the people last night, I have never been beaten in my life except by women. And I submit that most guys, they get fooled by women. They don't know how to make out a lot of it. But whenever I've set myself to do anything, I have done it. I have never failed in my life, no matter what the Jews tell you. Those of you who know my record knows it's true in business, in the military. Anything I've set out to do, I have done. And what I am out to do, folks, is to win. Not say, boy, did we put up a good fight. I guess we shook them. We got a big vote that time. I am out to do one thing, and that is to get power. Too many people in the right wing are ashamed to say that. They're afraid to talk about power. They talk about getting rid of big government. Folks, it is not big government we should be afraid of. It's bad government. It's evil men in government. And you don't get rid of these people by, it's just like a town that's having trouble with gangsters. Can you imagine a town that's being overrun by gangsterism, disbanding the police department, decentralizing the police department and disarming them? What we need is tough guys, strong government, in order to get the rascals out, the liars, the communists, the perverts, the cheat, the people that are stealing from us. Now, there's no question in my mind, and I think that most of you, especially you businessmen, must know by now that what the Jews are up to isn't even political. It is a swindle. Our people have built this great nation. Our people have done it by sweat and work and taking chances, investment and management and careful thought and invention like Henry Ford. And all of the things that our people have put together to build all of this great nation. And the Jews have come over here, and they want it. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, they are taking it. And this, let me tell you, one of the methods that they use to take it away from you. And this I know from being in Washington, and I've got a lot of friends in Congress and people who I've had one in the White House until very recently. The biggest method that the Jews are using right now to take your country away is something that I've never read about anyplace. Arthur Schlesinger and all these Jews in the White House have inside information whenever the president is going to do something. You can follow that easily. Well, now you businessmen, answer this for me. If you knew for a fact that they were going to close a big base or open a big base, and you knew that ahead of anybody else, couldn't you do pretty good in the stock market or in real estate? Well, the Jews know this. When they talk about capitalism, what the Jews mean is stealing from us. They get advanced information, and they sell short and buy long. I'm not permitted to know enough to know exactly how it's done, but they have advanced information, and guys like Zeckendorf and these Jews, these big operators, are running around the country stealing us blind. They're taxing us blind, and they're giving our money away to buy votes. Now, you all know this is true. In order to stop this, folks, you can't stop it by enlightening people. This is the mistake. This is why we have lost and lost and lost. And I pray that I'll have the strength and the wit to make you understand that this will continue until you have one thing, not enlightenment or book or a John Birch Society or even force and guns. When you have finally managed to win millions and millions of people, one way or the other, so that they believe in something with all their hearts and souls and love something and a leader, at this point, you will be able to turn those people out legally. It can't be done illegally, by the way. It's got to be done legally. To win those masses of people, you must have a program that is emotionally satisfying to them. Now, let me turn your attention for a moment to what happened in California. I'm sure you must all be familiar with Proposition 14. Have any of you realized the import of the fact that in California, Goldwater lost by a smashing margin? LBJ just swept right over them in California. And in that same California, Proposition 14, which was an anti-nigger proposition, won by the biggest majority any place in the country. In other words, now, if the lesson of that is not clear, I don't know how I can make it any clearer. On the subject of economy and the Constitution and states' rights, Goldwater lost. But on the subject of race, which really gets people here, people are afraid of niggers and they hate them, most of them. On that subject, he would have won. And I happen to know for a fact that the minute Wallace looked like he was doing real good, they nominated Goldwater, and all of Wallace's support disappeared because Wallace could have won. Wallace could have won this election. So they nominated a kite, and they drew up millions and millions of dollars, and they got everybody working their hearts out for this Jew for president, and now everybody's discouraged. Well, you wouldn't have been discouraged if you'd had Wallace. Because Wallace had an issue that reached people's hearts. He proved it way up north in Minnesota. He proved it all over this country. And the Jews keep depriving you of your best issue. And that best issue is always emotional. And basically, it's race, just like family. A man will fight for his family. And the race is only an extension of your family. My race is all white people everywhere, not just in America. I love all good white people everywhere. All our white Christian people, no matter where they are, I love them. And for these people and for his family, the man, white man will fight. When you start talking, now this is the hardest thing to get across to white right-wingers. When you start talking to right-wingers about states' rights, I mean to the masses about states' rights and the Constitution and legality, and especially big taxes, you lose them, folks. Now that's the truth. I know advertising, and I know you simply don't get them to follow you. Goldwater couldn't. And he lost. When you start talking about race, when you start talking about basic issues of the family and the home and protecting women in the streets, then you're going to reach those people and you're going to seize them and hold on to them and you can win. I just cannot make that strong enough. You have got to reach the people emotionally, not intellectually. If we don't, we are going to lose as we have been doing for 50 years. Well, the next question people say to me, well, how do you think you can win? You talk about emotions. Here you have that awful swastika that everybody hates in the name Nazi. Well, let me give you two answers to that. Number one, whenever I go anyplace to speak at a college, and I've just been speaking all over the country, and I have hundreds of invitations pouring in, whenever I go to speak anyplace, you should see what happens when I step up to the podium. There is absolute horror. There's a tremendous emotional shock feeling in the audience. There's silence. When I step up there, you can hear it, you can feel it, it's electric. And folks, I know how to move people. I'm not giving an emotional speech here, but when I speak in the street or in a situation like this, I can seize those people and hold on to them and move them. When you say they hate you, no, they don't. That's not true. Most of them are just kids. They invite me to be naughty. I'm a bad guy. And they have Gus Hall so they can horrify their elders, and then they have me, and that's even more horrifying. Everybody has a fit. So they invite me just to be a, like saying a dirty word at a party. That gets everybody mad. But once I'm there, I don't care what they invite me to do, they get me there. I speak to them. I've just spoken at the University of Hawaii, Stanford University, San Jose State, San Francisco, University of Michigan, Antioch, all around the country. I keep speaking at these colleges. And I might mention, by the way, nobody else gets these invitations. The kids don't want to have some dull, dry as dust old conservative. They want a bad guy. So I accommodate. But the main thing that I want to get over to you is you cannot convert anybody emotionally until you get them emotional. Doesn't this follow? You've got to get people feeling something before you can change their feelings. And when a bunch of conservatives, like I used to be, dry as dust, say, now, let me tell you people that the Constitution says so-and-so, and the law of so-and-so says so-and-so, you go about 10 more words and you've lost the whole audience. They're all sitting there thinking about their dates and where they're going to get a bottle of beer and anything else but what you're saying. They never do that when I speak. I get them absolutely clutched and hold on to them. They send hundreds of Jews at the University of Michigan when I just spoke there on the 13th of October. They had 350 Jewish war veterans who counterfeited passes, student passes, to get in there. And they were all sitting up in the front of the hall, and those Jews were getting ready to tear me to pieces. And I realized it. So when I started speaking, I had it fixed so that I had them transfixed for long enough so they couldn't get going until I won the audience a little bit. They wanted to hear them speak. Then when the Jews did start, I asked the audience, I said, I can't speak if these Jews down here are going to raise hell. And the audience told them to shut up. And every time the Jews opened their yap, all the Gentiles said, and that was the end of the Jews. I have been able to move people and hold them by emotion when you can't do it by just words and principles and ideas. General Walker, everywhere I've gone that General Walker has spoken, all I hear is catastrophe, catastrophe, catastrophe. Here's a man with a great heart. I would have followed him. I would have disbanded the party and followed him all over the world if he had led. But he didn't lead. He destroys us. Everywhere I go to a university, he's ruined the whole right wing. They think we're a bunch of idiots because he taught about the principles and the Constitution, all the things we love, but you can't sell it to young kids. You can't sell it to masses of people. In essence, what I'm preaching to you folks is let's, instead of continually saying we've got a great product, any of you men who are businessmen would never say, all I have to do is have a great product. You've got to have salesmanship. Who ever heard of succeeding in business by just saying, listen, you bastards, we got a great product, and you damn sure better buy our product. Who would ever stay in business very long doing that way? That's what we keep saying to people. We say, we've got the truth, and you people better listen to it. And then we sit back and wait for them to come to us, and they say, let's go find LBJ and his poverty program. I'm preaching salesmanship to you. And again, you say, well, the plastic and the name Nazi, this is salesmanship? Yes, it is. I'll tell you exactly why. The swastika has a terrific emotional effect. The name Nazi has a terrific emotional effect, not only on our people, but on the enemy. I wish that you people could be with me whenever I show up in full Nazi uniform amongst a bunch of Jews. I'm telling you, let me tell you one experience I had up in Boston on one of our first tickets of Exodus. I sat in a Terrain Hotel looking out a window from about 10 o'clock in the morning until 2 when I was to picket. And for all those hours, for 4 hours, I watched 10,000 Jews, I mean 10,000, that was the report in the paper, filling up the street. And I watched them coming from everywhere. They had lead pipes and they were cracking them in their hand. One guy had a bailing hook and he was jabbing at everything with his bailing hook. They were waiting for me, and I'll admit I was scared to death. I had 4 guys with me, and they were all looking out the window, and one of my biggest guy, Roy James, was laying in the bed. He couldn't move. We were all paralyzed. It was horrifying. But I finally knew I had to go. By the way, I had about 50 guys who were supposed to come and join us. They couldn't, but some of them couldn't get there, and the other ones got jammed in the truck and couldn't get through the Jew mob. So finally, I had to go alone, the only one in uniform. And I went out there in an overcoat over my uniform, and I walked into the middle of the Jews in the overcoat, and when I was in the right place, I took off the coat and held up my sign, and gentlemen and ladies, you should have seen the effect on those Jews. Now, these people, remember, were there to kill me. Plenty of them. The cops had told me that. When they saw me, absolute silence fell on them. It was just as though a lion had landed right down in the middle of the crowd, and they all just looked, and here I'm all alone, 10,000 Jews, and it took them about a minute. Before they could do it, they were paralyzed. And finally, one of them hollered, "It's Rockwell." And then, as I told the folks on the way over in the car, they couldn't even get started. They were so anxious to get me, they all fell all over each other. They got in each other's way trying to kill me, and I was able to survive until the Irish cops got in there and nearly killed the Jews getting me out. And by the way, that was a great pleasure. Boy, they were cracking those Jews over the head. Irishmen were pounding the hell out of those Jews. And later on, when they were down in jail, every Irish cop that could got down there after my autograph, shaking my hand, and say, boy, you sure showed those Jews something. What guts and so forth. Now, what I'm leading up to is this. The swastika, number one, absolutely paralyzes the Jews. It's like a bird before a snake. When you go out there as a conservative, they know everything about you. They know exactly what you're going to do. They know what you're going to say. They got everything all planned, and they just wipe you out. This happens again and again and again. You can't get any publicity. you're absolutely ruined from the beginning as a conservative. You're too nice. Jews ain't nice. They're vicious, and they're rough and rugged. And their last meal, the last thing they do to you, they call you a bigot and hate monger, and finally, if that doesn't work, they say, you're a Nazi. And I say, yeah, we're going to gas you, Jew. And this, in their last dying day, they never thought this would happen to them. And it completely ruins all their plans. It gets them hysterical, and they act like the Old Testament Jews, the Pharisees. They just go wild, insane out of their heads, and they convict themselves before the mob. They just completely ruin themselves. In other words, the swastika completely destroys all the Jews' plans, and it wrecks all their plotting and scheming, and it gives us the advantage of the attack for the first time. It's the only thing I know of where you can attack them. Now, we're a little tiny organization. So are you. You say, well, I'm small. Well, sure I'm small. But considering the population of the United States, so are you. No matter how nice a Bercher you are, or a right-winger, or whatever you might want to call yourself, we are a tiny little minority. Now, when you're faced with an enormous organization such as we are, the Jews and the Communists and the Reds or whatever you want to call them, the niggers, their organization is enormous. Surely I don't have to tell you that. It isn't just in America. It's worldwide. It's a tremendous revolutionary organization. It is not a liberal organization. It is a revolutionary terrorist organization. Surely I hope you all understand that. The enemy are not a bunch of the opposite of conservatives. They are disciplined revolutionaries. And they're not the opposite of Birchers either, by the way. I hear the Reds and liberals screaming about the Birchers. Aren't they fascist and aren't they terrible? Well, I never saw a Bircher do anything terrible in my life. And I've sure seen a lot of communists do vicious and illegal and vile and bloody things. You're not going to be able to lick those people by being nice. You've got to be vile. You've got to absolutely hit them where they least expect it. What we have to use are the principles of guerrilla warfare. And I'm not talking about physical warfare, I'm talking about political guerrilla warfare. When a tiny little person, when any one of you ladies, is attacked by a great big man, you haven't got a prayer and a pushing contest. But if most of you know, I'm sure, that the weakest lady here, by the principle of judo, can throw the biggest man over her shoulder, throw him out of his face. This is true and you all know it. How do you do it? You never do it by pushing back. When he pushes, you don't push back. You use his own strength to overthrow him over your head. Isn't this correct? Isn't this the way you go? This is precisely what I do. The Jews come at me, 10,000 of them against me. And can you imagine the effect that this has on the Gentiles? That see all these nice lovers of free speech and tolerance and brotherhood trying to kill one little guy. They look at this and they think it's awful. And I just throw all those views over my head, and it's all done because we are radical, hate-mongering, bigoting, Nazis, or whatever you want to call it. We're as bad as you can get. And it just completely wrecks all the Jewish plans. They just simply can't deal with people like us. Now, the other thing that it does, the swastika and the name Nazi and so forth, let me first say this. And this is perhaps bad psychology because in a speech you should never make anything, especially a speak for kind of sell an idea. You should not make negative things, but I think it's necessary because there's so much misunderstanding on this point, and I get so sick of being called a Jewish spy. I regret that our name involves the name National Socialist. I am in no sense whatsoever a socialist. Socialism is mostly Marxism, and I have no part of it. And I hope you all understand that, but here is why I will not run away from it. Adolf Hitler said that the white race is a master race. And he said that if we're going to survive, we've got to destroy communists. Now, most of you, I imagine, a lot of you don't realize that what I'm telling you is the truth. Adolf Hitler fought the Alamo of white civilization. He held the fort over there until enough of us like me. I went out to kill him. I fought the Germans in World War II, and I hated them because I thought they were evil and wicked and trying to overthrow my country. Now I find out what they were trying to do. They were patriots. They were Christians. They were violently anti-communist, they were racist, and they were fighting the Bolsheviks, the atheists, everything that I'm against, they were fighting. So I went over there and stabbed them in the back and helped kill Christians on behalf of Jews. Will you tell me what we gained out of World War II except Israel and a bigger communist world? What the hell did I fight so hard for? What did I see all those guys get killed for? I can't see what it is. They told me I was saving Poland. Who's got Poland now? And Hungary, and Romania, and Czechoslovakia, and Korea, and China, and Cuba even now. What was it that I saved? And my answer to it is, remember I told you, you've got to fight for the truth, not part of it, and you can't run away from it. You've got to stand up for the whole truth. And part of the truth is that Adolf Hitler fought your fight. And I realize I'm going to lose some, perhaps some people here tonight saying that. I must say what I believe in my heart. I'm not going to lie to you. Adolf Hitler fought for you. And I went and stabbed him in the back. And everybody who fails to study for himself to find out whether what I'm telling you is true or not is helping to do just what I want, to stab our own people. Now, how in the name of God, folks, do you think that we're going to win by stabbing our own people? Those of you who've been in the right wing quite a while, you know how many people are calling me an agent for the communists and the Jews. And it goes all over the right wing. Everybody I know in the right wing is claiming that everybody else is phony, spies, profiteers, no good. Everybody is accusing everybody else. And I think every night the Jews must have a laughing period. I think they get together for a whole hour and laugh at it. And we deserve it. Because we're so stupid. We keep cremating each other. We keep wiping each other out. Now let me review again and try to point out what I'm trying to bring together here. We have been losing because we have been preaching facts and dry approach, which is lousy salesmanship and will never win the people. We have refused to understand emotional salesmanship. We have been attacking each other and refusing to stay unified and sticking together while the enemy is tightly unified and works in blocks. We have allowed the enemy to dictate our policy. Now, I will venture to say, even those of you, some of you who may have a lot of doubts about Adolf Hitler, if you will examine in your heart, you have probably in the past been more vehement about it than you really felt, because it saves you from the wrath of the Jews. One of the biggest errors we make is fighting only on the grounds that the Jews permit. One of the things the Jews do, they draw a little circle on the ground and they say, this is responsible conservatism. This is what they do right now. And if you're in that little circle, you're okay. We let you fight. That includes Buckley. Not so much Hoggis anymore. He's getting too bad. But a little bit well. In other words, there's certain people that are called responsible conservatives. And that's all right. Now, let me ask you folks, have you ever heard of a war, and we are in a war for survival, have you ever heard of a war that was won by people doing what the enemy permits? Can you think of any more foolish than doing exactly what the Jews say you can do? Now let me reverse that for a minute. What is it the enemy hates the most in the world? Look at your television every night. Read in your newspapers. Read your magazine. What does he rage about that's the vilest thing in the face of the earth? Is it not Nazism? Is it not Adolf Hitler? There are communist concentration camps right today and Christians being murdered and tortured in them, 20 million of them right now. Communists admit this. Do we ever see that on the television? No, sir. On your Jewish television, you see Adolf Hitler and his stormtroopers beating people, and you see the pictures of the Nazis stabbing people and torturing people. Isn't it true? Don't you hear all the time that the vilest thing on the face of the earth is a Nazi? I go into college libraries, and they got every book by Karl Marx all over the shelves. No Mein Kampf. You look into a book, any collection of the books of our time, you will find every other kind of vile communist book, filthy, pornographic book, no Mein Kampf. And why do you think that is? Have you ever stopped to think, why does the enemy hate Adolf Hitler so terribly? And the answer is because Adolf Hitler got him. He almost killed him. He just about wiped out communism. He came that close. And the only reason, in my opinion, that he lost was because he didn't care enough about the whole white race. He said, I'm going to save Germany, and he did. And to me, this is exactly like a guy going down in a sewer and says, well, I don't care about all these other people, but I'm going to get a little clean place right here. And that's what he did. He cleaned out a nice little place, and then the sewer just rushed right over him, and they used me to do it. You cannot fight a world revolution on a local basis. You have got to have a worldwide counter-revolution against the Jews, against communism, and against racism. And I might point out for the benefit of anybody who hasn't already realized it, and I doubt anybody in this room is in that category. Right at this moment, there are 7 dark people, most of them under communism or fighting for communism, for every one of you in here. And Red China is leading them. And our niggers and Cuba are right in with them. And they already, one of the things I learned in California right now, they have a huge mass army of Chinamen right now up on the northern Mongolian, or not Mongolian, Soviet border, ready to go into Alaska. And they're keeping them there. And our niggers will join them just like that. You are in deadly, deadly danger every minute from this black uprising. It isn't even communism anymore. It's the dark peoples of the earth being led by the Jews against us. And if you don't do something intelligent very soon, you're not going to survive. Now, my pitch to you is that I don't think we can do it by force and violence. If I thought so, I don't hesitate to say, and I've said it publicly, and if there's an FBI man here, I'll put it on tape for him. If I thought that we could win by force and violence, I would be out the streets right now with a gun. We're in deadly danger. Our civilization is almost gone. Our white Christian American republic is almost finished. And if force and violence would win, I would believe in it and do it. At the risk of my life, I did it in 2 wars. I'm not afraid to do it again. But it won't work. You can't do it by force and violence because there are too many idiotic Americans who will cremate you. I commanded 3 squadrons in the United States Navy. I was in the Navy for 19 and a half years as a fighter pilot. And I can tell you right now, I could be given command of the right forces, and any group of Minutemen or guerrillas or anything you want to name, I can wipe them out in a week with modern methods. We used to wipe Japs out of hundreds of acres of woods with depth bombs. We'd just depth bomb all the woods away and blow all those Japs to pieces. Don't tell me you're going to run sneaking around the woods and stop the communists after they're here. The only way, folks, that we can win, the only way we can stop the extermination of the white race, the white Christian people that built this country on behalf of the Jews and the niggers, there's only one way you can do it. You have got to win your people back. And you're not going to win your people back by preaching the truth is going to make them free. You've got to win their heart. And to win their heart, you've got to have a heart. Now, this is the hardest thing for me to preach. Especially in a gathering like this, it's not so difficult when you're out in the streets talking to a bunch of truck drivers, but it's terribly hard to make people in the upper income levels understand that you have got to love the common man, especially because that word is so filthy. It's used by every rotten politician in the country. They talk about the common man all the time until it makes you sick. But I do love the common man because the common man is our people. And he's been stolen away from you. Do you realize what they've done with this management versus labor business? They put the businessmen over on one side and got all the businessmen hating labor because labor is now run by gangsters. And they've got the labor people all hating the businessmen as a bunch of dirty exploiters. Do you realize what they've done? This is they have taken the brains and the leadership away from the white race and dumped it in one corner. And they've got all the fists of the white race and the guts of the white race and put it in another corner and got them hating each other. And we've got to cut it out. You cannot fight labor. You cannot be only for your side and for your class. We've got to get rid of class. We've got to get rid of these divisions amongst us. You cannot hate Catholics. This is one of the most ridiculous things that I know of. And if I lose somebody here for that, that's too bad. Anybody who insists that he's going to fight and hate the Catholics, all he is doing is driving away about a third of our population and dumping them over there where the niggers can get them when they get to them. They get us first and then them second. You cannot hate the Yankees. I'm a Yankee from Maine, and I'm probably a better Confederate than a lot of the people that are crawling around someplace down here. Some of these politicians I see, I believe I could out-Confederate any day. You cannot hate any members of your group. We need them all. And how are you going to win them? And I say to this is just what Adolf Hitler wrote in Mein Kampf that he wrote in book after book and said in speech after speech, you must first love them. Love all of your people. Now, this just seems silly in a way for a big hate monger and a head nazi to sit here preaching love. But that's just what I'm doing, folks. I love our people. And I actually am as gentle a man as you've ever known. I've never been a bully. I hate bullying. I'm not a fighter. I'm not a combat man. I love my family. I'm an artist. a philosopher, a major in philosophy. I don't want to do this, but I don't see anybody who is standing up and fighting for our people. I hear a lot of talk, and I hear a lot of things that people are going to do, and I see people getting guns, but I don't know anybody that's out in the streets day after day, wherever those nigger communists pick up their heads, I'm there. And I'm the only guy that I know is doing it, so I have to do what I'm doing. I nevertheless am a soft and gentle person who loves our people. And I preach that this is, if you don't love our people, you cannot fight for them. Not sincerely. You'll be a phony politician like the leftists and the commies and these liberal scum. You've got to love our people. And if you do love our people, then you must not be afraid to say we're going to take care of you people. Now, by this I mean, if you get to the point where your only interest in the right wing is to get the income tax cut down so you can keep more money, and you don't realize that you can't do that without the help of the people, then you'll never win. They're going to keep taking more and more of your money. You need those people, and those people need you. Our common people need your leadership, and you need those common people to survive. You've got to get together, and the minute you convince those people you're only interested in money and getting your taxes down, and ideas that keep you in your social level in the hell with them, you'll lose them. And that's what Goldwater did. Do you have any idea how many people in unions? I've done a lot of surveys. And every union in the country, there were thousands and thousands of people who hated the niggers, and they would have liked to vote for Goldwater because they thought he was against the niggers, but they were scared to death that Goldwater was going to take away their social security, their jobs, their unions, and destroy their economic security. That's why he lost. I want that, the full import of that, to sink into your heart, because this is why we keep losing. We don't have aid. We pay no attention whatsoever to the principles of salesmanship. You can't possibly win masses of people when you're driving them away by scaring them to death that you're going to let them starve. You've got to love them, and you've got to be prepared to do everything you can to help them. And when they sincerely feel that, they'll vote for you. So now to sum up. In order to win, we need the people. And when we have the people, we can win power. Now, I'm not just talking through my hat, even though you haven't read it in the papers, because it was blacked out, the Richmond papers. I was surprised to get down here and find out the Dallas paper was no good. I thought it was wonderful. And you've probably heard that our Richmond paper is the greatest. And I thought it was. And when I actually started operating in Virginia, I found out the Richmond paper is more insidiously wicked than the Washington Post. Because everybody believes that the Richmond paper is just wonderful. And I found out that the Richmond paper is the biggest bunch of liars that ever lived. They've actually helped Martin Luther King in Virginia. And they completely blacked out everything I did summer before last when that big war at March on Washington was coming up. You remember that August 28th horror? I went all over the state of Virginia preaching to the people, let's make a stand against these niggers in Washington. And folks, this is the truth. So help me. Everywhere I went, I drew bigger crowds and more applause and more enthusiasm. And don't forget, they knew what I was. I wasn't sneaking in there as a state writer. They knew I was a Nazi. I could run the niggers out of here and take care of the Jew traders. I told them openly exactly what I was going to do, and I got cheered. I have the tape and record. Some of you may have heard of it. Speech after speech, I was cheered, and I have won the people of the state of Virginia. If we are strong enough to be able to survive and put on a campaign, I can win the governorship of Virginia next year. There is nobody to oppose me. Harrison is the governor now. He came out for LBJ. Harrison has got to go out. There's only one term for governor in Virginia. There is nobody else to oppose me. The only man who could beat me is Senator Byrd, and he's senator and can't resign. He won't resign, I'm sure. He's not going to get out of the Senate with his seniority. There is nobody. I'm operating in a vacuum. I've got the people of Virginia. I can and will win. And folks, the reason I have won in Virginia and can win those people is because I have preached one thing to them that nobody else dares preach. And I'll put it in these terms. I preached, let's get those niggers. And you should have heard the people of Virginia when I used to say that. At every speech, I'd say, folks, we're going to make Virginia the rottenest state in the Union for nigger agitators. And the people would just go wild. They'd just cheer and applaud. That couldn't be heard. Now, maybe you say, well, that's terrible vulgar to say niggers. You shouldn't talk like that. Well, that's the way they talk. That's the way common people talk. If I said, folks, I don't care for Negroes. Of course, there's some good ones, but I'm for state rights. And I think that we should do something about it. They'd all sit there and they'd all walk out on me. But when I say those niggers are going to have the damnedest, rottenest time in the state of Virginia, and I tell them how we're doing, and by the way, you might be interested to know what we can do. Do you realize that as governor of the state of Virginia, I have pardon powers? And if one of my men gets carried away by accident and shoots him a nigger agitator, why, I can send him on the way to the electric chair, pardon him, and have him over for dinner at the governor's mansion that night. As fast as they shoot niggers, that's one. Do you realize that we, without breaking a single law, we can pass laws? I know Earl Warren is going to throw them out as fast as we pass our laws. But I can make laws faster than Earl Warren can cancel them out of the Supreme Court. And we will have green hat days and black hat days and brown hat days for the niggers, and any nigger with a wrong color hat going to jail. And we will have it so bad that those niggers won't dare move. We're going to have nice, peaceful niggers like we used to in Virginia. And anyone, the communists that come down there, I don't think they're going to live very long. And if I have to go to jail for it, I will. The people of Virginia, they listen to this. This gets to their heart. If you go down there and preach all this constitutionalism and so forth, that doesn't reach the common man in the street, carpenters and the truck drivers and so forth. Well, they do love our Constitution, sure. But that doesn't mean so much to them as this nigger business. They're fed up with niggers pushing them around. And by the way, many of you don't know because of the press blackout, but you know, as far as I know, we are the only people in the country that has ever stopped the niggers in the town. You remember Danville? You remember reading about Danville, how they were tearing up Danville, Virginia? Well, I went down there. My headquarters is only 250 miles away. I went down there, and there's a wonderful paper, by the way, in Danville called the Danville Bee and the Danville Register. Wonderful paper. The guy talking to me is 100% with us, a real white Christian. And he reported everything I said. So I went down there when Martin Luther King announced he was going to be down there on the 15th of December, I believe it was. I went down there on the 14th of December, and I had a big interview with the paper, and I had all my stormtroopers ready. And by the way, we had about 6 growths of spiders from a biological laboratory somebody had contributed. And I was going to station my men with a nigger's march. We were going to hit them with living spiders. And if you don't think that would have been niggers, that would have been the end of the nigger riot. We had it all organized. We were going to play Dixie Adams so loud they couldn't hear the damn chant, and we shall overcome. We were going to fix those niggers good. And I put every bit of that out in the paper. I said, if the niggers march, we're going to march against them. And Mr. Coon never came. He got sick. He had a sore throat in Atlanta, and since then, Danville has been peaceful as a grave. I'm in a bit of trouble in Danville. The only thing it takes to beat these people is to stand up to them. They're bullies. And the people, if you don't think the people of Danville love us with a passion, I mean, they're just anything we want. I go into a store in Danville, and I can't pay for lunch anywhere, and I'm a Nazi. So don't tell me that the swastika is such a terrible thing and I can't win. They know we'll fight. Now, one of the examples I've used with some of the people that I've talked to here in the last day or so, I'm going to have to use again because it's so good. When people say to me, you can't win as a Nazi, let me ask you to search your heart and see how you feel when you see a little guy being attacked by about 6 big guys, and they're all beating on him, and they get the little guy down and bloody, and the little guy gets up and fights some more. So they pound him some more, and up comes the little guy, and he still fights, and they beat him down again, and here he comes again. Don't you love that little guy? You look at him and say, look at the fight in that little guy. Look at him go. People love a little guy that'll fight against terrible odds and keep fighting. Well, this is exactly what I've done with the plastic. Nobody gets beaten and pounded and pushed as hard as I do, and they never get it whipped. We keep right on coming again. For 6 years now, we've been at it. This is our 6th year. And the people of Virginia, you don't know so much about it because it's been blacked out of the press. But we've been fighting every day in Virginia. Every time those burrhead niggers show up, those ugly blackheads, here we come. And the people say it's got thrown in jail. The next time the niggers, here we come again. Every time a Jew communist show up, we grab them. And the people respect that. They will not listen to any more talk. They are not going to listen to any more of this violin playing about how wonderful our Constitution is. And especially, what do you think they think when they hear George Wallace get up and say, I just love niggers, it's just that I'm for state's rights. Do you realize what this does to the masses of people? Even in spite of that, he almost won. But don't you realize that our country is drowning in hypocrisy and lies and cowardice? Now, the common man in this country is looking for men who will stand up and tell the truth if it means they get shot. That's the kind of man who founded our country. It cannot be saved from hypocrites by being a hypocrite. It cannot be saved from liars by being a liar. And it certainly can't be saved from cowards by being a coward. The only way we're going to win is to convince the people that we will fight. And I don't care how people say, well, you can't win and so forth. You got to fight anyway. Now, I'm not saying that everyone here should be out with an armband in the street and bashing Jews and chasing niggers around with a club. What I'm going to preach is professionalism. Any of you who get sick, you don't go out and try to doctor yourself or call in some friend of yours that's a dear, sweet friend. You call in a professional doctor, and you pay him to fight the germs for you. When you have a lawsuit, you don't go in and try to fight it yourself, and you don't call a dear friend. You call a professional lawyer, and you pay him to fight it. Now, what I'm saying is most of the people in this room are responsible people, leaders in the community, people with businesses, people with jobs, and so forth. And you have no business getting out and having to go out and do the fighting yourself. Unfortunately, some of you have had to do it because nobody else would. And I respect you for it. However, what I do suggest you do is support professional fighters who have proved that they can go out and do it. And I'm not just speaking about me. I think that we need all the various groups that exist if you can make them quit fighting each other. Those of you who heard my tape in Amarillo and this little talk I made, I thoroughly believe that we need all levels. Communists have not only their guys at Harvard, they've got their ADA, they've got their union communists like Walter Reuther, and down at the bottom level, they've got their hoodlums with their brass knuckles. Now, let's look at the right wing. What do we have? We've got the top level, the Birch Society, and it's calling the bottom level and the gutter us communists. We've got all of our different levels. Every single person on each level says, we're the only ones you need. You don't need any other level. In fact, the rest of them are all neutralized. And communists, and Jews, and spies, and everything else. And it's not true. The Jews don't have to send us any spies. Actually, we are losing mostly by default. Our people are so fouled up and fighting each other, the Jews just have to sit back and watch us kill each other. I am saying to you that we need all levels. We should support professionals. At the moment, the thing we need most of all is gutter fighters. We have a big group at the top, the Birch Society. It's very successful. Will you tell me what level, what group we have that is out in the streets day after day fighting these Jews and communists and niggers except us? If there is another group, I don't know what it is. I haven't been able to get anybody to help us except just my boy. When it came to August 28th, you remember that disgrace? A quarter of a million niggers marching all over Washington, D.C. And by the way, you should have heard the police problem they had with just the sanitation in the public parks the next day. Because there weren't enough restrooms, and you know what the niggers did. That was the foulest mess you ever saw. And I tried to get any single right-wing leader, any of them, to join us. And do you know who was there on your behalf? Probably at the time, a lot of you thought I was a communist spy. I stood in the middle of those filthy niggers, all those communist agitators, in the middle of a ring of nigger air policemen. Bobby Kennedy, he called it his pig pen. That's what they told us. The niggers told us it was there, you in the pig pen there. All these nigger air police penned us in. I had 87 of my boys, and I couldn't get a single white man any place to stand with us. We have been, every single time they have attacked, we've been there. I've got guys, men, some of you may have read in the papers about the House Committee hearings where that Jew was laughing that an American pilot got shot down and one of my boys grabbed him and almost throttled him to death. That boy is right now doing 6 months in the worst nigger jail in the country, in the District of Columbia jail, doing 6 months because we couldn't afford a lawyer for him. We had a court-appointed attorney who was the sorriest coward I've ever seen. And he just completely fouled up and let the boy go to jail. And actually, if he'd have done anything at all, if he'd got a white jury even, there's not a white jury in the country would have convicted that boy. Because you'd have should have seen the witnesses against him could hardly speak English. They were all Jews. Oh, wait, do you know who I saw, by the way? I forgot to tell this to this very day. You know who was down there at the trial of my boy, sitting with the Jews? I can't think of his name. What's the name of that Welch, that little Boston creep that was the lawyer for the Army in the Army McCarthy hearing? Remember the guy? Welch, but something, what was it? Not Robert Welch, it was James Welch or something. There was that little cherubic creep sitting with the Jew communist, right in a row with him. Just as I suspected, the Army McCarthy hearing. But anyway, that boy's doing time in jail now. I got guys in San Quentin doing time in jail because we stand up to these people. I've been in jails all over the country. And as I told some of the folks, we're getting ready to put out a Duncan Hines guide to the jails of America. We know just which ones are good and how to deal with each one. I will say this. The communists and the niggers, folks, and you know this is the truth, they go to jail willingly by the hundreds. Our people, I can't find anybody to go to jail with us. Not a soul. And I don't ask you people to. I don't think you people have any business going to jail. Mr. Rockefeller, I know, doesn't go to jail, and neither does Mr. Baruch. Mr. Baruch pays the guys to do. Mr. Baruch pays those niggers and those white people from colleges to go down to Mississippi and tear up Mississippi. And what I will say to you is what I ask you to do is to support the people who will fight and do what you can to put an end to this story that the fighters in our outfit are agents for the Jews. I have never heard such crazy logic in my life. If the harder you fight the Jews and the more successful you are, you know what they say? Look at Rockwell. He's really chasing those Jews around and they can't get him. That proves that I'm working for him. This is like a boxer in a boxing match and he knocks the other guy down and says, well, you see, they must be paying him to knock him down because he otherwise he couldn't knock him down. What kind of logic is that? How can we win? Anytime anybody starts winning, you get accused of being working for the other side. So I will wrap the whole picture up and say this. This is what we must do as I see it. We have only, at the most, 6 years left. I think 1969 is the end. That's the deadline. In 1969, I think there will be an economic catastrophe which will wipe out all the wealth that all of us have. Anything that we have to fight with will be gone. In inflation by 1969. By 1969, we must be prepared to have a counter-revolutionary mass movement. Now, I don't know how many people know what I mean by counter-revolutionary mass movement, but I don't mean a birth society. I mean masses of inflamed Americans ready to go out in the street and strangle with their bare hands, if they have to, anybody who is tearing up our city, as the niggers are beginning to and as they will next summer. People who are able to bring law and order to the streets when the police can't. And as if you don't know it already, in two cities already, the police have confessed they can no longer maintain law and order because of these civilian communist review boards they have. The police are now helpless. The Jews have emasculated your police department. I am training a corps of leaders. And when 1969 comes, well, like the Jews planned in 1929 and like they did in Germany, when you have thousands and millions of communists and Jews and niggers tearing up your streets, if you have not organized a band of professional leaders about whom all the populace can gather to fight, you will go down in utter chaos and disorder. George Washington said, let us raise a standard to which the wise and honest may repair. And I think that was one of the greatest political statements that was ever made, tactically. This is what I have done. This is what I'm trying to do. I have raised up an image of the utmost anti-Jewish, anti-Negro, and anti-communist force that there is in the country. And when the day comes when chaos strikes, the people know where to go for a leader. Now, let me again point out that I am not trying to set myself up as some kind of a dictator or leader. I would rather do nothing. But I know of nobody else doing it. Who else is out fighting these people? And I can't get anybody even to follow. Somebody has got to do it. I have been doing it. We are getting quite successful at it. And what I will beg you folks to do is to study. Try to understand that in order to win a political fight, we have got to win masses of people. We have got to win power with those masses of people. And the only way we can win those people is by having an emotional pitch to them that they can understand. And I beg you not to think that that's evil or immoral. If we can't use comic books, which I never read, they're so disgusting to me I can't bear them. All my sailors, however, and every squadron I've ever had, read comic books. So we're going to have to use comic books. If they want to use all kinds of television slot programs, we've got to have television slot programs. If they've got agitators in the streets, we've got to have agitators in the streets. And above all, every single time those niggers and Jews attack, you must have some opposition to them or the masses of people will figure you quit. You're the leaders of our people. You are the upper classes, the intelligent, educated upper classes that they desperately need for leadership. And if you will not lead them, they are going to just lose all heart and quit. And that's in a lot of cases what they've done. They're now following Mr. Ruther and the Jews and that kind of people. So I ask you again to study the tactics of success. Let's quit losing, folks. I intend to win. And I will close with telling you a motto that I think you should all remember. I use this sometimes with my men when they get a little bit discouraged. You have heard the Reds say, better Reds than dead. I'm sure you've all heard them say this. And to me, this is naked treason. And you have heard conservatives say, better dead than red. And to me, this is utter defeatism. This is saying we have no choice. We either got to be red or we got to be dead. Well, I say all of that is a lot of garbage. Our motto is not dead, not red, dead, red. This is what I think you ought to be thinking of. Let's kill them. And that's all I have to say, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
How long did you say he's up for?
6 months. He's done about a month and a half.
What name is there?
They had a Jew named Morton Slater, who was testifying before the House Committee that he laughed when the American pilots were shot down, and Lon Donaway, a young Irish boy, jumped up there and grabbed him by the throat. By the way, an interesting thing is, when the cops jumped on him to stop that, there was a terrible skirmish, and the Jew got out of there all busted up and had to go to the hospital. And we couldn't understand it, because Donaway only gave him one belt. You know who belted him? The cops beat the life out of that Jew. They hate him. The Washington cops are with us lock, stock, and barrel. They'd join if they could get away with it. It's a good idea. All over this country, I have seen guys, especially in the Minutemen, going to jail because they get illegal weapons, and they insist on trying to do it by breaking the law. And I will not tolerate breaking the law. If you break the law, all you do is head right for the penitentiary. I could give you many an example. I'll give you a quick little story of Don Branch. Told the boys last night. Don Branch was one of the finest young men I ever knew. Real clean cut, decent, good fighting American. He had a wife and two little kids. And the Jews, he was down in Miami, and the Jews have a district attorney up there down there in Miami who is a real lout. One of the worst men I've ever seen. All the Christians. In fact, on Miami Beach, you know, they actually have special irons for any female. When you go into court, when our guys have been grabbed in Miami Beach, they have irons that go between your legs and put your hands, and you walk into court like this. So they humble you when you go down into court. This is how vile they are in Miami, and this district attorney is part of this deal. They also freeze you, by the way. They have an air-conditioned room, and they wet you down and freeze you, let you sit naked all night till you're shivering. Well, this guy had just about enough of this, a fellow named Don Branch, and he got together with the Minutemen. He didn't know whether to join me or the Minutemen. He sent him his application, and I didn't know he was messing with the Minutemen, but I later found out he was fooling around with the Minutemen, and one of them was a man named Plumaker, who had been a member of the Hitler Youth. So this guy thought, boy, this guy is great. Young fellow, real clean-cut guy. And Plumaker says, what we've got to do is throw a scare in that Jew. We'll set some dynamite off on his lawn. It won't hurt anybody, but it'll scare hell out of that Jew. And Plumaker says, I know where we can get the dynamite. So Branch and Plumaker go out one night, and Plumaker delivers these broomsticks cut up and wrapped in paper with little fuses in them. And poor old Don Branch runs up on the lawn to put the dynamite, and all the lights turn on, and here's the whole Miami Police Department. Plumaker is with the Miami Police. And he's doing 20 years in the penitentiary. 20 years for putting broomsticks on a lawn. Now, I have seen this happen as one incident. I could go on and on all night, all over this country, one guy after another. Just in California, was out there, they got another guy with a barn full of machine guns. He's gone. All I can tell you is don't break the law. You do not have to break the law. We have the power to win legally in this country. We can do it. We can do it by getting elected. You know what our greatest weapon, in my opinion, the greatest weapon in the world, thank God for the founding fathers, is the secret ballot. Now, I know in some states, of course, it's pretty rotten. But in Virginia, in most states, I believe, in most places, it's honest enough so that You, let's take any one of you here. You can spend all day running around saying, Rockwell is no good, I ain't a Nazi, I hate the Nazis, and then you can go in the booth when nobody's looking and pull down a little handle for Rockwell. And this is why they can't beat it, because there's no way that they can stop that. The people, in other words, can vote what's in their hearts in that booth. What they say is something else. I know people all over this country that will tell you publicly, if you met them, you'd never know that they were my people, any more than I'd ever betray any of you. How many people know will know tomorrow morning when you go to work that you've been here tonight? And if you've got to ask yourself, oh, Rockwell, terrible man. But you probably, you might hope maybe some of you will vote for me when the time comes. And this is what's going to put it. You don't need to break the law. And every time you break the law, you are simply playing into the hands of the enemy. And 9 times out of 10, when anybody comes to you and suggests breaking the law, you know what it is? Our cop. And by the way, I believe in the police, I believe in J. Edgar Hoover, and I believe in the in most, almost entirely. I think they've been put pretty square with me. Whenever you find anybody proposing bombing or killing or any kind of thing like that, tell them to shut up. And if they won't shut up and they won't stop it and they keep pushing it, the next thing to say, if you don't shut up, I'm going to have to turn you into the FBI and the police department. And if they keep it up, turn them in. Call up the cops and turn them in. And I think some of them have really surprised the police because they send down Abe or Izzy or somebody, and the next thing I know, I'm on the phone saying Izzy's down here. He's no good. He's planning a bombing. He's one of their boys.
Well, I know
I
described J. Edgar Hoover. Is that the reason for his...
I don't know. I think J. Edgar Hoover... Here's what my analysis of J. Edgar Hoover is. I have never met an unfair FBI agent. I have heard lots of charges in the South that the FBI is doing this and that, and every time I investigate, I find it's local police saying they're FBI, or it's even Jews. In one case, I found 2 Jews. Melvin Bruce was one of my boys over here in Atlanta, who was at the Oxford riot. And while he was away from his house, he rented his place, and 2 FBI agents, he told me, came there and were harassing his wife. And I started checking, Greg, and they said, oh, yes, they were FBI agents. And I began checking. You know what they told me? The FBI agents were wearing sweaters. Now, anybody who ever has known the FBI, they almost have a uniform. They look just like I do. You never saw an FBI agent in a sweater in your life. And I checked further. They were 2 kites pretending to be FBI agents. So I turned them into the FBI, and I think the FBI will catch them and grab them. They've asked me if I ever catch anybody in person. And you know a lot of stuff about the FBI, and it's not true. Certainly, if anybody would get it, I would. And the FBI has been right down square with me. They tell me openly, if I break the law, they put me in jail. And if I don't break the law, they will protect me, and they have. I have been protected, in one case, from the New Orleans Police Department by the FBI. And I'm a Nazi. One of the worst dangers I ever faced when I got down to New Orleans, I was fighting these freedom riders. Remember our hate bus?
Yeah.
I went all the way down to New Orleans chasing these niggas with a hate bus. When I got there, the FBI, the stupid New Orleans cops grabbed us, and the biggest man I've ever seen got me in a cell, and he said, Rockwell, I'm going to see just how tough you are. Good, big guy, and I'm all alone in this cell. I said, well, you can go ahead, but before you do, I just appreciate it if you'd tell me why you were with me. He said, you communist son of a bitch, you race mix and no good. I said, race mix? That's how stupid they are. Well, I found out time after time that there's misunderstandings. People simply just don't know. In other words, policemen often think that we're some kind of communist. Well, like many of you, I bet you a year ago everybody in the room thought I was a Jew spy. I know a lot of people do.
Well, when they arrested you down in New Orleans in that paper, I called the Attorney General of Louisiana and talked to him on long distance.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, those people are trying to save you. They're fighting for you.
Well, God bless you. I'll tell you, you helped get us out. People have no idea how much you can help. Whenever you hear about our boys being put in jail, don't hesitate to call the warden of the jail, call the attorney general, call the chief. Raise hell. The more help. In fact, if it hadn't been for you folks, there was so much hell raised about us being in jail there, we were on a hunger strike. I didn't eat for 8 days. We didn't have a bite to eat. And they were getting horrified. If there had been no publicity, if it hadn't been for you and they like you, they'd have just let us starve down there. But there was so much hell going on that they wanted us out there. They were begging me to take bail. They said, please, won't you get bailed out or get out of here because of that tactic. So I hope you always will. Whenever you hear of our kind of people being arrested and in a jail, do like you did. Call up there and harass them.
The governor in this country,
Good for you. In my opinion, here's how it started with the right wing. I don't think so. I think the right wing leader started. Here's the way it began. Well, he's what now? Ron Goss for me. He just put out his latest bulletin and said, "I really whipped the Jews on Canadian TV," which I did just a couple of weeks ago. But here's what I believe happened. The right-wing leaders, and so I came along, like Gerald Smith, I tried to help all these, Gerald Smith and all these people, except Tommy McGinn. He's the only guy that's always stuck with me. I always been good friends with Tommy. Oh, he was the greatest. I just worshiped that old guy. He was a sweet, dear old boy. But all the rest of them were telling their people, "Boy, we're out there," especially Gerald Smith, "we're out there fighting as nobody could fight harder. We're giving those Jews fits. It's impossible to do anymore." And I used to hear Gerald Smith especially say, "They're giving me the quarantine treatment. I can't be heard. There's no publicity." So I said, "Well, the hell with their quarantine treatment. They're going to quarantine me. They're going to have to do it the hard way." And I went out in the streets and blasted right through it. Now, here are these right-wing leaders who are telling all their people, "Send in money because we're fighting as hard as we can." And here comes this little upstart guy, Rockwell, out in the streets having riots all over the country, raising holy hell. And they can't understand the people, the leaders are being asked, "How come we can't do that?" And the only answer I think they could see was, "Well, he's working for the Jews." That's where I believe it began. That's the only explanation. Otherwise, why would people say that? No, there's certainly no truth to it. And I can't think people would be so evil that they just lie for nothing. I think that it's a matter of trying to explain how to their people how come I was getting away with it. To make it look, in other words, like it's impossible to do what Rockwell's doing. That's why we're not doing it. He's pretending to do it. It's because he's working for them.
Well, Gerald L.K. Smith's pretty tough on them, I
don't know. Oh, he's done a great job. Listen, Gerald L.K. Smith educated me, Smith and McGrilly.
I talked to him one night, and I said, "Do you think it's any good Jews?" And he said, "I know more than 3,000 in the cemetery."
Yeah, I used to know a fellow named Biggers down in Houston. I don't know if any of you ever know him or remember him, but he was a great old boy. I really loved him. And one time he was driving me by a huge Jew cemetery in Houston. I looked, I said, "Isn't that awful?" He says, "No, I think it's wonderful. I wish it was bigger."
You know,
about
the Canadian TV.
Well, I don't know what there is to tell, except that the Canadian TV came down, the National Canadian Television Network came down and made a hour show down in Washington at the studio down there on tape, and they broadcast it on October 25th. And I sneaked into Vancouver to see it, and by golly, it was beautifully done, by the way. We got friends like that Dallas. Remember that thing of our poster in the Dallas paper? I think there's a lot of friends we got in place with the push thing. Well, they put on a terrific, it was one of the most dramatic scenes I've ever seen. It started off with a light coming from behind my head, and here I am scowling down on these two Jew interviewers. And the thing starts with deadly music, and here's Rockwell, and they start saying, what makes you think that the Jews are no good? So I started telling them about the Russian Revolution, how the Jews are doing this, and the Jews are leading race mixing. I blasted the Jews. I don't know why I really blasted them. One fact after another, the kind of stuff that we knocked ourselves out distributing. And I got 20 minutes on Canadian TV. And before it was over, the Jews were down at the Canadian Broadcasting Building in Toronto trying to tear it down. They had a terrible riot. They've got the Prime Minister of and Diefenbacher and the opposition man. Both are up in Parliament. The Jew papers are raging all over the country about this terrible outrage. And what they don't know is I've got another bigger one set up. Not to say that, but right here. It went very well. I got it on tape. One of the boys here, did you get that tape copy?
Well, I got that.
The debate. Well, I'll let you have some of the other ones, the Canadian TV and so forth. Somebody else asked me to.
Yes, let me tell the story then. Out in Honolulu,
I was invited to speak out there at the University of Hawaii. That was a couple of weeks ago. And when I spoke, I got the chance to make 3 speeches at the university. And by the way, again, the only reason they invited me was because I was so bad. They invited me and Robert Welch and Gus Hall, and Robert Welch welched out. He wouldn't speak. He was willing to speak with Gus Hall in the program, but not me. He said I was a Jew spy and the whole bit, so he wouldn't come. Well, I know I was going to challenge him to a debate if he got me. I did challenge Gus Hall, and he wouldn't go. But anyway, during my speech, there was a coon who was, by the way, I have a picture of him. He's a Jewish coon. Coon was a Jewish. Oh, no. I think some of them are just apes, but this was a mixture of a Jew and a coon. And he kept harassing me something terrible during the question and answer period. And he kept saying, what do you mean that we Negroes are inferior? I'm not inferior, you're inferior. And he says, you can't prove it and everything else. So he kept challenging me. And finally, I told him, oh no, that was later on, I was on a radio show. As a result of the speech, I was invited to a 2-hour broadcast in which people call in on the telephone and you answer questions. And I think it's interesting, I might tell this bit. Here I was in the studio answering these questions, and people calling in from all over the Hawaiian Islands calling in to ask questions, and I was answering them. And little by little, during the first hour, a whole lot of people began to filter in the studio. And I couldn't understand that, because usually they don't allow that. It's real quiet. But all these people began to come in, and they got real excited every time I put some Jew or nigger down. I never saw this in a broadcasting station. I couldn't understand it. And a little while later, after about the first hour, a little dumpy guy with a little red nose came and sat down beside me, and he began to punch me in the ribs. He says, good show, boy. And I said, you're supposed to be real quiet, you know, on a radio show, on a microphone. I'm not supposed to have all this going on. And every time I say something, tell him about this, Mike, he was bothering the hell out of me. I said, will you get out of here? Shoved him off, and a couple more times this happened, and finally he says, oh no, he says, I'm the owner of the station. Trying to push him away, his name was Dave Watermill, and he's one of the richest men in Hawaii, and he owns the television network, and he owns the hotels, and he owns all this and that. And here I'm giving him a shove, and said, well, the minute I found out who he was, of course, I said, well, yes, just what would you like him? So he was saying, tell him this, tell him that, and I was trying to tell the best I could what he wanted. And he got so carried away, well, I was doing a good job, if I do say so myself, he got so carried away that finally this nigger called. That's when the nigger called, and the nigger says, Mr. Rockwell, you're chicken, you won't debate so well. And I said, listen here, if you have the guts to set up a hall anyplace, I'll debate you anywhere, anytime. And with that, Mr. Watermill jumped up and ran into the control room and grabbed the microphone. He says, I'll give Mr. Rockwell a whole hour to debate this colored man anytime he wants. And this guy, it turned out to be the public relations director of the NACP. So it was announced, and by the way, by this time, after the second hour, almost everybody in Hawaii was glued to his radio, and their automobiles all listening to this business. So it was announced all over Hawaii that I was going to debate this coon. And the next morning, I went down there, and they gave me a full hour on tape, which I have on a tape that I played with some of the folks last night. And I debated this coon. And those of you who heard it, I just wiped that poor coon out. It was just pitiful. He didn't make anything. And I had called the headquarters. I called all the way back to Arlington and spent $46 on a phone call because I didn't have my facts on the NACP. And luckily, I did get all the communist fronts of all the NACP directors and the fact that most of them were Jews. And by the way, that's one thing I kept saying. If you Negroes are so superior, how come you have to go get Jews to run the NACP? Aren't there any coons that can run this? Then I also pointed out that I didn't know of any coons that were running the B'nai B'rith. I asked him, could you name me a few coons that are running the Jewish organization? Well, anyway, that was, I would say we reached about 500,000 people with that. And as a result of it, I got invited to the Officers Club. Imagine this, at Fort Chapter, and the next morning I was invited to breakfast at the Officers Club, sitting with generals, admirals, and imagine, they knew who I was and everything else. But we did so well, people have been so lied to and misrepresented what we are, that when they met me and heard me on the television, they invited me to the Officers Club, and I did quite well out there. Ah, there's my boy. I just spent 3 days with Dr. Swift. And Dr. Swift, I have the utmost respect for him. He's great. And I'm not at liberty. Swift's a Jew. Say not. Robert Welch says me and Swift are the two vilest neutralizers in the country, and I consider that to be one of the greatest honors that I've ever been given. He's great. Oh, Dr. Schwartz is as phony as a $3 bill. He's a Jew, and he's just as rotten as he can be. Dr. Schwartz goes around saying that the Soviets are, that the communists are racist, trying to protect the white race, and they're vile, hate-mongers, and bigots. Now, can you imagine anybody trying to palm off a thing like this? Myron Fagan is also a Jew, and I have no proof of this like I do on Schwartz. But Myron Fagan, I tried to help him when I was commanding officer of the squadron in Washington. As an advertising man, I went over and tried to help Myron Fagan. And he was putting on this play, I forget, some play about the UN.
Yeah.
And he sent me up to see his directors or something, and I never saw two violent communist Zionist Jews in my life. Terrible people.
Well, I know. I knew he was a Jew, and I know he had a lot of Jews in his office. But
puts out good stuff.
I think he does.
I agree. Well, Schwartz puts out some good stuff. It's just, here's what seems funny to me. Jews are leading the communists. Jews are leading the liberals. Jews are even leading the niggers. In other words, the whole enemy forces are being read by the Jews. Is there nobody else but Jews to lead our side? Do we have to go and get nothing but Jews also to lead us? Are we all so stupid? 150 million Americans that we can't find a Christian to lead us?
Well, the reason I like Aaron Sagan is that he told facts about Isaac.
Well, that's true. He puts out good stuff.
He really did expose that dumb Isaac.
Well, so did Welch. Welch's politician is a masterpiece.
Welch done it. When it came time to him to stand up
and know.
Say that, yes, I call him a communist,
sure.
He didn't do it.
Don't tell me about it. This is why Westbrook Pegler just told me that he's going to spend his life getting Robert Welch.
I don't know.
Calls him a Holy Ghost.
I wrote Goldwater, and I said, you condemned the politician. I said, I think that's one of the greatest books ever.
I do, too.
Because I said, I believe every word about Eisenhower being a communist. I wrote Goldwater that while he was running for office.
Yes, sir.
Do you know much about Terry Rosenquist?
I've heard of him. I don't remember now. No, I don't know much about him. I do recommend that all of you get a book called The Greenfelt Jungle. And read it, and you will really get an eye opener on Goldwater. Goldwater is best buddies and pals with Greenbaum and Willie Beoff until they got killed. Two of the top men in Las Vegas gangland. Flew around in his private airplane, took money from him, $8,000 from one of them.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, some of you have read my book and have seen my book, and you know, some of you have been to my headquarters and know that it's printed in my cellar. We print it ourselves and put it together by hand, page by page. Elizabeth Dilling says, Jew name Isidore Schwat or something. I don't know, some terrible Jew name is printing my book. She's still saying.
I never make a mistake except what I do. Yeah. And then she laughs it off.
Well,
So
Ron Gostick has blasted me as bad as Elizabeth Dilling, and in his latest bulletin, he gives me high praise for what I did on the Canadian television. And I think that Miss Dilling will someday come along and quit blasting. Sooner or later, I tell you what I think is happening. The Jews and niggers are driving us all together. Is what I think has happened. We can't afford to be fighting each other anymore.
Do you know Arthur Patrick out in Los Angeles?
Arthur Patrick.
O-S-F-I-E. Patrick. P-A-T-R-I-C.
No, ma'am, I don't believe I do.
Well, she wrote me all about Goldwater 3 or 4 years ago. And, of course, I never was for Goldwater, but I voted for him this time because I didn't want Johnson.
Well, I couldn't stand either one of them. I think I'd rather have Khrushchev than Goldwater.
Well, I was going to write Wallace and Hanging, but I thought, well, I'll just
well, that's more
going
to you know.
I know. Well, Elizabeth Dilling and I go right down the line. I'm with her all the way. But she's just mad because. Sure, I met her. I was speaking in Chicago and she had the hotel closed and had me thrown out. Well, she claims that Hitler was a Jew, you know, working for the Jews. And this is.
Well, if she ever gets her head made up,
she can't do much about it. Oh, well, I agree to that, but I can't see her back down now. She's been at me for 4 steady years, every issue. Haven't you read her bulletin?
That's your bulletin, but that's boring.
Well, you get some of the old bulletins and read them. Boy, they're hot and sizzling and red hot.
Well,
I think Robert Welch is just plain and simple a yellow coward. There's no other word for him. He's just yellow. He's a yellow coward. Well, you sure Westbrook Pegler. I just was over talking to him for a whole night there, about 3 nights, 4 nights ago, and all he could do was tell me how yellow what Robert Welch is. Because Robert Welch, here's the analysis that I get from him. Robert Welch has got himself a nice deal. I mean, he's up in high society, and he's accepted here and there and everything, and if he comes out and blasts the Jews, boom, he's down with us. He's down amongst the biggest, and he doesn't want to do that. He's just too chicken to get down there and fight. Oh, no. Well, I'm grateful to him. Do you realize that he is the best recruiting grounds in the world for me? He's producing more. A lot of you people, I bet, were virtues. I love him.
Well, you can't start investing in the economy without winding up.
You know what happens? Everybody, he tells people, my God, the communists are coming. Look at them. Here come the communists. People say, yeah, what do? He says, write your senator. And people say, write your senator. And then they see Harry Gold and all these types coming at him, and they can't go that route too long. And then they say, how about Rockwell? He says, oh, he's a communist. And how about all these others? He told Cole Edward Field is a communist. Everybody's a communist except him, practically.
Well, now, he had a war on his reading back in the early days.
Yeah, he got it off all right.
I know. What about Reverend Oliver?
Who? Reverend Oliver is one of the greatest Americans who ever lived. I hope to have him with us very shortly. Reverend Oliver has put out a tape for Condi McGinley. Most people don't know that. Yes, sir. Oh, yeah.
And old birthday of Dr. Bass. Dr. Bass, there's so little about you that he didn't even know you'd been a name. And this is what he at least conferred to me and told me. I don't know if you've met him, talked to him or not.
Don't know anything about him.
Apparently not, because he didn't even know you'd been a name. Dr. Drastovich told me that he was very concerned about Robert Wilson. He told me that he didn't know. He's still on the council of the Burns Society, but he does not go along with what they're doing. He wants to see action. He wants to see action in the street. But he just can't get Wilson to do it. And he's concerned himself about the Burns Society. Now, he also is a little bit interested in his own mind about you. He has jumped to the conclusion that so many people have jumped because you have been successful in your past. But he knows absolutely nothing about you and hasn't really taken the time to jump. So many people have jumped.
That's right. I don't really blame the ordinary person for feeling that I'm a communist plant, because I remember one of my best friends way, way, way back there when I was working with Buckley and I was a nice little conservative, was a guy named John Casper that nobody'd ever heard of.
No, I know.
Alfred. Well, wait a minute. John Casper was a good friend of mine. He was starving, and I used to put him up when I was in business. I was doing right well, and I used to have him sleeping at my home, and I fed him, and I took care of him. And I went down with him one time to help Admiral Cromwell in one of his campaigns, and I worked with John Casper, and I knew him well. And the next thing I knew, I was down in Memphis working with Robert Snowden on the campaign for the 48 states, and all of a sudden, here comes John Casper bursting into the headlines. And he got tremendous headlines all over the place. You remember, I was down in Clinton, and he was tearing up the Jews and carrying on. And I'm ashamed to admit this, I said, it's impossible to get publicity in this country unless you're working for the Jews. John Casper must have sold out to the Jews. I'm ashamed to tell you that I did it, too, just like many of you did to me. I did it but I did take the trouble to investigate. I went and looked up John, and I looked up all the people, and I found out what the hell was going on. I found out John just did a hell of a good job. He went into Clinton, and he really tore those Jews and commies and niggers to pieces. He did a terrific job, and he won. So I jumped to the conclusion he must be working for the Jews. This is what a lot of people do to me. I'm successful. We get enormous publicity. I keep smashing the Jews, and people can't believe that it's possible unless I'm working for them. Right? So I can understand it.
What about Wally Butterworth?
Wally Butterworth, now I have only met him 3 times. And I'm going to have to be careful because I don't like smearing and blasting people. You're all asking me questions, and I have to tell you the best of my knowledge. Now, I don't want to hurt the man, but Marilyn Allen, who is a good friend of mine, despises him, and I'm not going to quote Marilyn Allen, and she seems to have facts to back it up. She says he's a lush, and that he is got thrown out of one of the nicest homes in Alabama, whether that's true. But I do know that he has been kicked out of 2 or 3 homes. Whether there's anything to it, I don't know. What he puts out on his records, I think, is great.
Well, I do too.
I think it's fine. I'm just telling you. Who?
Hargis.
I had more fun with Hargis about a year ago. Well, it was about 7 months ago. I dropped by in Tulsa, and of course, he will have nothing to do with me. He won't answer my letters. And he put out an article by Matt Savitic that I tried to hang some poor guy out in the... By the way, do any of you remember that Armstrong case out in San Diego?
I was going to ask you about that.
Well, would you like me to tell you the story? Mr. Armstrong, well, let me tell you the story.
Mr. Lively, I have one girl I will send.
All right. This guy Armstrong out at San Diego, I heard knew nothing about any of it until I suddenly started reading in all these right-wing publications that this fellow Armstrong was hung and that I did it. Because Armstrong objected to me speaking on the campus, so I began to look into it. I made a whole special trip out to San Diego to find out what it was all about, and here's what I found out. I tracked down the facts, and I found out that Armstrong was indeed supposed to be a conservative, but listen to this kind of conservative he was. His roommate was a nigger and he used to hold hands. He was the head of a thing called the Model United Nations to teach people how great the United Nations was. Number three, he had applied for the Naval Academy, and the day he hung himself, a couple of hours before, he'd just be announced that he could not get into the Naval Academy, and he told everybody that if he couldn't get in, he was finished. Now, that's the story as much as I can get from it. The guy was an unstable, from what I can gather, nut and queer nigger lover and a United Nations lover. And on the basis of this, Mr. Matt Savitic, supposedly an ex-communist, has printed a big smear in Hargis' paper that I hung this guy. I never heard of him. I didn't know anything about it. And
you
I got...
Not,
huh?
You were not scared to speak.
I did speak at San Diego State College. That's the only place I've ever got filmed. That's where this youth... By the way, that's an interesting story. Here I am speaking in this huge amphitheater, thousands of people there, and it was one of my earlier speeches. I wasn't very experienced now. It would never happen to me now. But I was up there speaking, and the kids kept saying, tell us about the Jews. Let's hear about the Jews. And I'm much, they were goading me. I didn't know how to control an audience then. So I finally said, all right, you people, I'll tell you about those Jews. So I blasted the Jews. And in the middle of it, I was having a ball. I was really reading those Jews off good. And here came a little guy, and I just quietly walked up and got, walked up the steps, walked all the way across. And I saw him walking from the side. And usually in speeches, the committee will come up and whisper something to you. You know, your time is short, or you have to move, or this and that. So this guy came real close, and I figured he was from the committee to tell me to do something. So I leaned over to hear what he had to say, and let me have it right there. Pow! See, and I got my fist up, and I was just about to fight him. And by the way, the guy that hit him for me, I only had one stormtrooper with me, and he came out through the back door, and he hit that Jew. Finally, he knocked him down on the ground, and he was pounding his head. He wanted to kill him. And the interesting thing is that my stormtrooper was Leonard Holstein, a Jew. The only Jew I've ever had. He was a good kid, but he's nuts, and he's going further than that. Now he's advocating marijuana and stuff. He's no, I threw him out. But anyway, this guy that hit me was a Jew by the name of Ed Cherry, and he's now Walter Winchell's personal assistant. He has his old lips get tied in, and they've named a square in Brooklyn, Cherry Square, after this type of government. Well, anyway, I forgot what you were asking me about Sandy. Oh, anyway, that was a speech that Armstrong had opposed.
Well, had he opposed that?
Yes, he had. He put out a little paper, and he said, Russell is a plant for the communists. And all he's doing is he's going to speak so they can invite Gus Hall. But he forgot they'd already had two communists there the week before. What do they have to invite me to invite a communist for? They've had communists for years running around speaking. I'm the first guy that's ever been able to get in to oppose those guys. But they don't care about facts, don't they?
That's true.
All right, so and I talked to the chief of police of Coronado. I spent an hour with the chief of police, and he said it was all garbage and baloney. They're not a bunch of crooks, and so on. It's a bunch of paranoid trying to make a big thing out of nothing. So anyway, I went down to see Billy James Hargis, and I couldn't get in if I got an appointment as me, so I had some of my people in Tulsa call, and they got an appointment for a rich manufacturer from New York. And Hargis was waiting for the rich manufacturer. And they escorted me right up, and I walked in the door, and he recognized me and said, how are you, Mr. Hargis? I said, my name is Rockwell. And old Hargis, I thought he was going to pass out right on the spot. Well, he rocked back, and I said, well, I don't want to give you a hard time. I'm just up here. I'd like to talk to you face to face. I found it pretty hard for a man to lie to you, right to your face. I'd like to hear you tell me some of these things, that I'm a communist and so forth. Let's go. Well, I got to give old Hargis credit. He's a pretty manly. I liked him. He was a manly guy, and we got going, and we got to laughing and kidding each other. He told me all the things he called me. I called him, and how I hurt his meetings and ruined them, and how much millions he lost because I said he didn't like the Jews. Then I said, well, you don't like the Jews, do you? He said, well, he says, and we started hedging and so forth, and then he started telling me how poor he was. And that was the funniest thing of the whole scene. Here he's sitting a great mountain of a guy. He says, you don't know how we're starving here. He's on a carpet that thick in the most beautiful palatial office you ever saw. And he's telling how hungry he is and starving. And I said, you don't look starving to me. He says, you don't think so? Look at this. And he takes his shirt off. He says, look at my shirt. It's ripped, and it's a silk shirt. I'm bending down a silk shirt. And I said, well, it wouldn't rip if you didn't eat so much. You're busting it out. See, well, we got kidding each other. And he called in two or three of his troops. And they were great guys. They liked, we got along good. We got along real good. And I finally said, Mr. Hargis, listen, you can't look me in the eye and say you're going to keep calling me a communist. If you will investigate, you will find out that Mr. Newton Armstrong is all the things I told you. I've checked with the police.
Now, if you find out what I'm telling you is true, will you please retract all this, that I'm working for the communists and so forth? And he promised me faithfully he would do that. So I've got a congressman, a real good Virginia congressman that's working right along with us, to get from the chief of police all the documents and send them to Hagen. And I've been patiently waiting for the retraction, and it's never forthcoming. And the people in Tulsa got together and were going to pay me to help sue him. And I finally decided not to do it. That's pretty well. He hasn't bothered me since then. And I don't want to fight any more right-wingers than I have to.
I heard in that book, got a book out.
I know
something about stabbing the Statue of Liberty or the left wing, the far left.
The far left is called. Yeah, he gets me another stab.
He's got a chapter to it.
I know. He was reprinting that thing. He couldn't have gotten that out. And I don't think he's going to bother me anymore. He you know what he thinks? He sincerely believes that by not fighting the Jews, that gets him on the radio. But what for? What is it we need to get on the radio if we don't fight the Jews? I can't see how you can win by not fighting the enemy.
And I hadn't read your book. What's that? And I told him, I said, I will not continue to read it when I find something in it that isn't true. So he said, well, I'll have to correct that, and I don't know whether he's in the news.
No, he won't. That's what he told me, too. He just said that to cool things off so he won't get any more trouble.
Well, why do Tom Anderson and all these good, fine people keep repeating that Hitler said he was going to conquer the world? I didn't find it in my account.
It's the same reason. Let me tell you a little story. I don't think you say, why do people keep saying this? Right-wingers don't do their homework. Some of you, I've met one lady here tonight that does study. But most people simply repeat what they read in the Thunderbolt and the Common Sense, and they repeat it around and around and around. And I found all Eustace Mullins did was take the truth and put it in a very powerful propaganda form and put it out. But what I'm getting at is you say, why do people keep saying this? Right-wingers don't do their homework. Some of you, I've met one lady here tonight that does study. But most people simply repeat what they read in the Thunderbolt. And on me, was no good, you get the heat off. Anytime you go around saying Hitler was a louse and the Jews say, well, that's all right, that's fine, you go right ahead and talk. So people say it in order to get the heat off them, and also people just keep saying it over again and never check it. Whoever reads Mein Kampf, I'll bet you in this room, I'll bet you this is the most educated group I've ever talked to. And sure, the Jews have been using it for years. Look at the big lie. How many people know that in Mein Kampf, Hitler says in Mein Kampf, that the Jews discover the little ordinary working man will tell a little lie to his wife, but he doesn't have the nerve to tell a big lie. So Hitler says the Jews discover this, and they therefore immorally and viciously use big lies to cheat the people, and it's the rottenest technique in the world. This is what he says in Mein Kampf, and yet they tell people that Hitler advocated the big lie in Mein Kampf.